Welcome to the Life Science and Marketing Podcast, where we discuss marketing and career insights and tips with leading experts from across the globe. Let's join our host, Paul Avery, CEO of Biostrata, as he chats with our next life science marketing guest.
Today, I'm joined by my good friend, John Kennett. JK is a smart, deep thinker and all-round nice guy. He's held a number of interesting marketing positions during the last 20 years across companies like Medaxial, Covance twice, Invigo and LabCorp. And these days, he's putting his deep life science marketing knowledge to good use as Director of Global Marketing, Brand and Solutions at Fortrea. JK, it's lovely to have you on the show.
Paul, lovely to be here. Thank you. And just for anybody who doesn't know, JK is not Jamiroquai. Which is an old joke of mine with a good friend of mine. I used to call him up at his office and introduce myself as JK. They were very disappointed when they realized I didn't have all the funky hats and the Lamborghini, but there you go.
You don't need them. You've got enough going on. You don't need all the apparel. So I know which JK I'd rather have.
There you are. There you are. JK.
Speaking of life, let's talk a bit about your life. How did you get where you are today?
Well, it's been a bit of a long, twisted old road, as I think many of us are. My first degree was in electronics engineering a very long time ago. My father was an engineer. I didn't fancy building pipelines, but I was quite interested in IT and electronics at the time. So I did what I thought was obvious, an electronics engineering degree. Soon discovered that the work itself was as boring as dishwater. But I also discovered that I was able to have a very straightforward conversation with engineers about new technologies and the application of those technologies. And that then became a marketing career because it meant that I was able to tell a story as to why they would use this and not that. And so that's how I first got into marketing. And that was about 30 years ago. Then the electronics industry, well, it went through a phase. A lot of it moved out to China. There was a lot of trimming of cost as a result. And so there was little opportunity for me to grow and progress. So I switched into what I thought was going to be a much more interesting area, and that of healthcare. And that was about 20 years ago, 20 years in healthcare marketing. Yeah.
Great stuff. So, you know, what have you enjoyed the most about working in the life sciences and healthcare?
Well, I think most of the people you talk to, I think, in this sector say, you know, there's something new every day. And certainly in a marketing position, we get to hear about all of the exciting new technologies and applications and, you know, just the world of medical devices, for instance, just that world alone. Brings up fascinating new stories on a daily basis. Stuff that you would never have thought of as a surgeon is peering over a patient and thinking, if only we had a thing that could do a thing. And so, you know, there's a device gets developed. That is a continual source of interest to me and to many of us in the industry.
What's the coolest or most interesting scientific area or device or project that you've worked on?
I guess for me, there's a few, right? So things like immunotherapies and cell and gene therapies, the personalized medicine stuff. You know, when you hear stories of people that have gone through, I don't know, four phases of cancer, and then they go through a trial with something like an immunotherapy. And they are not just remission; they are cured. that is the most amazing story. And you think that is the science, that's the industry that I'm working in. That's an amazing area. Another one which I came across only just recently was myopia, the loss of vision in the eye, and how something as simple as a pair of spectacles with a blurred edge has got scientific evidence to demonstrate that you can halt the progression of that myopia. Just amazing. I mean, the brains in our industry to come up and think of this stuff always impress me.
Yeah, there's so much cool science going on.
Oh, I think
I'm going to butcher this research, by knowing the 10% about it when you probably need to know the 90. But I know that the likes of David Sinclair have been working on using Yamanaka factors to basically re-engineer cells in the back of the eye. And they've managed to make blind mice see again. Wow. More than three of them as well. So statistically significant result. So there's people doing incredible things. And I like to imagine that people in 50 years, 30 years will look back and think, oh, wow, people used to get that disease or that disease. And we just don't have to worry about that stuff anymore. And I feel like I know these things usually take a bit longer than that, don't they, unfortunately, but certainly there's been incredible progress over the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I was in Madrid a couple of weeks ago at the ESMO conference. That's the big European oncology conference. 32,500 people at the conference. It was a fantastically busy show. And again, there you are hearing about breakthroughs in oncology that are happening all of the time. And, you know, where cancer used to be an absolute death sentence, today we're surviving cancer in ways that we never thought possible. So, you know, there is a huge amount of excitement there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to go deep with you on marketing, because I know you've done a lot of, be worried, because I know you've worked on a lot of interesting projects, but I also know you're a very interesting person outside of work. So outside of what you do in your day job, which I know does take up quite a lot of your hours, what are you passionate about outside of work?
Well, I've got quite a few interests. I live in the southeast of England, Rochester, actually, in Kent, and we've got a lot of history down this part of the world. I've got a very old cathedral, an even older castle, and associated with that is a lovely old pub. And I do a lot of thinking time in that pub, which is a great place to be. I'm very involved in our local church and in the community that we have here. But I think the thing that you're probably alluding to is that my master's is not, as I said earlier, not in a bioscience. My master's is in psychodynamic psychotherapy. I was a practicing therapist in my spare time. I don't know what spare time is anymore. But in my spare time, I would practice as a psychotherapist, and that was an incredibly rewarding piece of work. Very opportunistic for me to use some of the and develop some of the skills that I now find I use in day to day work with understanding people and understanding what it is that is driving individuals, which fundamentally is at the core, I think, of what it is that we do in marketing. Indeed, you probably know this story, Paul, the story of Edward Bernays. Eddie Bernays he is known as the father of PR. He was the man that back in the 1920s walked into the executive's office of the American tobacco companies and said, I can double your sales in a year, and for that privilege, you're going to pay me a princely sum of $1 million, which in the 1920s was an absolute fortune. Yeah. And what he did was he'd spotted the fact that women were on the ascendancy at this point, that women's rights and the feminist movement was really pushing forward. And he was working at the time in Hollywood and in Broad Street, working with actresses, and he persuaded these actresses to hold a cigarette in their hand, and the caption read, you know, torches of freedom. And these were famous women holding up a cigarette saying torches of freedom, and guess what, sales doubled overnight as all the women rushed out and started buying cigarettes. What's interesting about Eddie Bernays is that he happened to be the nephew of a certain gentleman called Sigmund Freud. And Sigmund Freud and he spent many summers together in Austria, exchanging notes. Sigmund Freud, of course, famous for developing psychotherapy, and Eddie Bernays took very much the same human insight principles and developed PR. And I think that's a really interesting connection that I only discovered after the fact that I'd done my master's. But there you go.
I love that story. That was what I was alluding to, JK. You're right, because it's always inspired me that you've got such a big heart, not just in our work interactions, because for those listening to the podcast, JK and I have worked on a few projects together, but also the things you do outside work that I do think, as you described, beautifully enriches how you approach a project in terms of the people that you're working with and how it feels to work with you, but also the understanding and thinking about the audience and being empathetic to where they're at and what they need. Before we came on the call, we were talking a little bit about some of these aspects, and you mentioned culture. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on culture and understanding how people need to work together.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is fundamental, right? You know, particularly since COVID, and we've all started working in 30-minute slots, you know, our ability to have a strong working culture means that we ought to be thinking about how we complement one another rather than compete with one another. And that for me is an absolute fundamental building block. I'm a leader of people in my organization, but I'm also an inspirer of people, a leader through inspiration. You know, my boss, he said to me just recently, he said, "Everybody comes to you with their problems, don't they, JK?" I was like, yes, they do, yes. And it is both a compliment and an insight, right? Because what I'm trying to push all the time is the freedom for people to just be themselves. You know, don't try and be something you're not. You know, don't be frightened by the science, right? Don't be put off by the fact that other people perhaps present themselves and they hide behind what they know of the science. If everybody kind of puts those barriers down and instead we join forces as an organization and we think more team, then actually we find ourselves in a position of being able to have really, really enriching conversations that bring the best out of all those individuals and encourage them to grow. And for me, it's much more important the people I work with rather than the company I work for. And I perhaps ought not to say that out loud, but that's fundamentally it. It's the people I work with. And so, you know, it was, I think it was Peter Drucker. Those of us that remember, I'm old enough to remember when he was publishing work, Peter Drucker coins the phrase, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it absolutely does, because if you've got a good culture in place, then you can have the best cut. You can have the best strategy in the world, but if you don't have the culture to deliver on that strategy, forget it. It isn't going to happen. So, you know, our team, our relatively small marketing organization that we have at Fortrea, we are very much a family. Some of us have been working together for more years than I care to mention. But even new people that come in, they find themselves very quickly, you know, these people say thank you for the work that I do, you know, and it's such a simple little thing, but it goes a huge way, because it means that sometime I have to turn around and say, I'm really sorry, would you mind awfully staying on and cracking this out for me? They'll do it. You know, I have one of my guys. He says to me, he says, I'll run through a brick wall for you. You know, so, well, I'm not going to require you to do just that just yet. But it's the culture that makes the difference in terms of being able to really truly deliver.
I love that. There's so much to unpack there. I agree on the company versus team part. I think for those of us working in the knowledge business, you know, which the life sciences pretty much is, in many ways, they're the same thing if you get it right. Right.
Yes.
And I think about the use of the word company in a sort of forces meaning, right? When you have a company, which is the group of people in, I don't know, the tiers, but like the regimen or whatever. And that company is a group of people who pull together to achieve an important goal, which is usually, if we think about the aspirational aspects of the forces, you know, protecting people and saving lives. So I think they can both be true if you're in the right company with the right people. So I absolutely love that. And you mentioned, or we've talked previously before about working in teams where they really have that mix of skills, right? You've had to work with a lot of extremely smart scientific people. Like, how do you go about building bridges between the scientific aspects of the organization and marketing so that everybody can work together to get great results? What does that look like?
So for me, one of the big learnings was go ask dumb questions. because there's no way that I could know, even people with a doctorate in bioscience they don't know everything about somebody else's science. And the only way you learn is by asking questions. And what I discovered is that generally people are very happy to describe to you the work that they do and why it's important. Actually, they like doing that. They like describing what it is that they're doing. And so, you know, being able to wander around a laboratory in the days pre-COVID, when we used to go to offices, I could wander around site and I'd deliberately go into somewhere I've never been before, you know, knock on the window or knock on the door and see if I needed to put a white coat on or whatever, and go and have a conversation. And the conversations are, you know, what do you do? Why is this important? How does this fit? And what you do is you end up extracting story, number one. You also build relationship, which is hugely important down the road when you actually want to integrate that story into in a meaningful way. And so that, for me, that's really a key fundamental. Put away your concerns about not knowing everything, and instead be open. You know, I had an old family friend many years ago who would sit. I used to sit in meetings and say, I think we have too many TLAs in this organization. And people would kind of nod around the table, you know, knowingly. They didn't really understand what he meant, because what he was saying was TLA three-letter acronyms. We have too many three-letter acronyms. and he did it as a bit of a joke, but it got people thinking about, you know, how do we communicate and how do we hide behind our knowledge? Good culture encourages us to no longer need to hide. It's okay to not know. It's okay to say, you know, how does this work? And how can we do that better? Why is this important? And that's where we are, as marketers, that's where we can then go on and generate stories, and we can do the storytelling, which of course is fundamental to what we do as marketers.
I completely agree. What a beautiful segue, JK, because one of my favorite things about working with you on projects is you've been your pretty much nearly unique skill to distill very complex, multi-stranded offerings into easy to understand, memorable packages. And we've just talked there about understanding the complexity and diving deeper in with the scientists. But as you said, ultimately, we have to tell stories about that science. So how have you gone about that in the past? And what advice would you give to people working in really difficult, challenging, technical areas of the life sciences?
So, I think I'm not entirely sure how I ever developed this skill. but I kind of, you know, and don't forget that I also would be very quick to say that that skill is significantly complemented by other members of my team who are much better at deploying those stories than I am. I can envisage the story and tell it, but I really need the help of others in my organization to help me take that stuff forward. And that's really important. But I guess for me that it starts with all those questions. And the questions, you begin to see the thread. And of course, the thread is always a single thread. And the single thread is, what does this mean to a customer? And why is a customer going to care? So the very simple stuff, Paul, you and I are fans of the strategizer model of value proposition design. I love that way of thinking. What's the job? What's the challenge? And what are the pains? And then conversely, you know, what are the things that we do as a business? That's the task. What is it that we do to overcome the challenges? And how do we provide pain relief and gain multipliers to what it is they're doing? If you distill everything down into those terms, fundamentally, even in our life science world, it is we're buying from people. People are buying from people. It's a trust game. Yes, our organization has got, you know, 20,000 employees around the world. Yes, we've got 30 years of experience. Yes, we've got lots and lots of clinical trials experience under our belt. But fundamentally, I want to know whether or not you can, you're going to stick by it and do what you say you're going to do. And that is, that fundamentally is what we're all in. You know, it doesn't matter whether or not I'm buying a television, having my car repaired, or you know, commissioning a multi-million dollar clinical trial. I want to know that I can trust the team that that I'm commissioning to work on. And so it becomes a human story. And in many ways, I guess that perhaps takes me back to my psychotherapeutic background and seeking to understand what the human story is in amongst it all. And then the science fits. Then the story comes through to, you know, the science fits into the story, because why do you do that? We do this because it feeds into this and it adds to this. And before you know it, there's your story.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's interesting. I remember watching a webinar once where one of the key takeaways from the webinar was all marketing boils. I'm not saying I agree with this, by the way, but all marketing boils down to how do you help people make money, save time, or be more efficient, or keep them out of jail?
Yeah.
There's like the four main things that you can boil most value propositions down to. And I think there's an element of truth in that, but I think the more powerful area is the sweet spot in the middle, right? You're trying to balance technical credibility and accuracy and often data-driven storytelling, which I think is highly valued in the life sciences, with clarity and simplicity around the benefits and what's in it for the customer type language. And I think where that point on the continuum is can depend on the audience, the product, where they are in their buying journey. Are they ready for a lot of detail now, or are they still quite early on and they need just the, you know, the Cliff Notes bullet point summary? And then finding that balance as you go is really important. But there's been several projects I know you've worked on. Could you give us any examples just to bring this to life for us in terms of how it works in the real world?
Yeah, I remember having one conversation with a scientist once who was a very valued member of our team. He was insistent that I needed to write a paper for him to be able to use to expand his the service that he was working on. And he was most upset that I said no to him. but the reason I said no was because, you know, I was trying to see how this works. You know, this was just noise. You know, our world is so full of noise. We've got so much stuff coming in at us all of the time. I spend the first half an hour of my day every day with my finger over the delete button of my email, getting rid of the stuff that doesn't even make it past the subject line. And so how we tell those stories in amongst all the cacophony of noise that we suffer is very much part and parcel of how we tackle this. And so, yeah. And to come back to your point earlier, you know, the keep out of jail, make money, save time. I'll add one in here, which I think is really important, which is, how about we might enjoy work? How about we might enjoy the people that we work with? And so again, for me, relationship is a really important factor. You know, it shouldn't just be about, you know, efficiency and problem solving. How about I like working with this person because they augment my thinking. Culture, again, the culture spreads, right? You know, how about my team become an extension of your team because we can work really well together, and I can spot things coming up on the horizon that maybe you haven't seen, and we generate that trust between us. And that is a often overlooked factor, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I look at the Western world and the way capitalism works, and you can see how it creates a never-ending pursuit of shareholder value, efficiency. What are your thoughts on how to find that balance? Because I really believe you get the best out of people when they enjoy what they're doing, and therefore that contributes to shareholder value. But sometimes those things feel at odds when they should be aligned. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they can be at odds. I think that we have to remain real in amongst it all. For me, the real is that, you know, we all of us have to carve out a living. Most of us have got a mortgage to pay or children to raise, or in my case, an expensive cat to look after. So we all need employment. In fact, one of the biggest scary things that we're seeing in the world of AI is the threat that this might change our world forever, in terms of work. And, you know, we gain an awful lot as individuals. We gain an awful lot by the output of our life force, you know, and that sounds quite new agey. So, you know, you get my point, right? We gain a lot by what we spend our time doing. So we need something, capitalism. I think it was Winston Churchill who famously said, you know, capitalism is the best that we've got. It isn't perfect. And indeed, mm-hmm. in our healthcare world, it certainly has its challenges. I spend a lot of time on the phone with my American colleagues and American customers. The healthcare system in America, of course, is very different to the one that you and I enjoy here in the UK. And it really does create disparity. So the opportunity for us to think, you know, what is right for people, what is right for humanity, well, it's always going to be a little bit skewed. And that's the downside of capitalism. It doesn't really help there. But fundamentally, we are where we are. We need to pay Caesar what is Caesar's. And that means being very aware of what value shareholders bring. Actually, shareholders mean investment in our organization. Shareholders mean an opportunity for us to continue to grow. And I've been through more than my fair share of mergers and acquisitions over my career. And I think there's a lot to be said for embracing that rather than merely ruining it from afar.
Mm. Balance is the word that comes to mind. There you go, dear listener. You joined for a podcast about life science marketing, and we've done a bit of that. But we sometimes get into the deeper, more philosophical questions, JK and I, often over a beer. Taking us back to the marketing for a bit, and I appreciate your input there, JK, because I think you're spot on. And in my inner voice, I was saying "hear, hear" as you were taking us through that. But offline, you said a phrase that I loved. Probably going to get it wrong. Orchestration versus cacophony, and you were talking a bit about cacophony there. So what's orchestration versus cacophony?
Yeah. So it comes back to this issue of just how much noise there is in our world. And we either contribute to that noise or we seek to tell a very clear story. So the biggest, the best known brands in the world are known for the most simplest of things. You know, the swoosh on the side of the Coca-Cola bottle, the yellow of the Caterpillar brands, you know, these brands become known for real simple things. And in that brand value comes loyalty, comes the opportunity to inspire interest. And so if you are an organization that just puts out stuff all the time, the way I liken this is I liken it to every member of the orchestra playing all at the same time, but not necessarily playing the same tune. And you imagine the noise that would create. It's a bit like that moment just before the symphony starts, where everybody is tuning their instruments. It's this kind of wild, sort of chaotic noise. And that's what is happening every day to every one of us. We get bombarded with all this stuff. But we also, as an organization, we're trying to get our brand conveyed. So how do we do that? And I think the only way we do that is through being truly orchestrated in what we present. So coming back to my earlier thoughts around, you know, how science often leads the way in our world, certainly our science often leads the way in terms of what it thinks is important. And it's a bit tail wagging the dog in many ways, because really what we're trying to do is we're trying to sell a solution. And that solution involves lots of science and lots of regulatory affairs work. And the point here is that if we are just focusing on just telling something that's interesting all the time, then all we're doing is we're adding to cacophony. And we're not, importantly here, we're not establishing our brand. And so if I want to establish a brand, what I need to do is I need to make sure that that ensemble is all playing the same tune all the same time, and it is a harmonious piece of music that makes sense to the listener. And I think that that's what, you know, I'm certainly taking that view very much forward in what we're doing at Fortrea now, wanting to seek to present a very clear picture about what it is that we want our company to be known for.
I love that. So, listener, in your own life science marketing, where are the instruments playing together and where are you being pulled off into creating noise? You know, how can you ensure your messaging, pyramid and hierarchy all cascades up to that one salient point that you want the audience to know about your brand? If they had to explain it in a sentence or two, what would that be? And then how do you get all those members of your marketing orchestra playing together so that those messages are being reinforced with the appropriate level of detail across the different tactics and channels that you use? I just think that's great advice, JK. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I'd go one stage further as well, Paul, because it isn't just the marketing organization. You know, the marketing organization has a lot of these tools. They have, you know, strategy planning. They have tactical deployment. They know a lot about different channels and different ways to be able to move a message. Actually, it's the overall company that needs to buy into this. You know, it's all well and good the marketing department having a very smart looking PowerPoint that is their marketing strategy. But if that stays on the shelf and it isn't cascaded through the entire organization, yeah, the hit. So here's another thing that that I see a lot of is a loss of a focus on product. So in the world when I was in the electronics industry, we were selling products, and these are often things were in a box and they did a thing, and it was relatively easy to put a label on that box and put them on a shelf and sell them because you were selling a thing that it did. That product marketing approach includes looking at where your cash cows are, what your rising stars are, what your problem children are, and of course, if we know the quadrant, what the dying dogs are that we need to quietly retire, right? That approach to life science marketing is rarely applied. And instead, what we should be thinking about is how do we bring a product, which in our world, of course, is a solution to a problem. How do we bring that product to market and monitor it in the same way that we would in that Boston cycle and ensure that we are retiring things that are no longer working? And that, of course, helps with the orchestrated presentation. Let's remove the oboe from this particular part of the orchestra because it is no longer being harmonious for us. Maybe we need to bring in the electric organ instead, or a drum machine, you know, in order to stay relevant and on top of everything. And so I think that, you know, as marketers, our part of our job is to ensure that our whole organization embodies what it is that we're saying. You know, I could put a lipstick on a pig all day long, but what I'd really like to do is not have to put lipstick on pig. I'd like actually the organization always to be harmonious in what it is delivering. Now, actually, that should make my job easy. In fact, it ought to make my job redundant.
Right. I love that. It's such a good point. In that orchestra, marketing's the violin section, right? There's plenty of other instruments that need to work alongside that. I was doing another interview for this podcast, and in the conversation we talked about how we create these lines within organizations to help us organize ourselves and better understand who does what.
Yep.
But those lines are fictional, right? To a certain extent, because the organization really needs to act as a whole. to deliver value for customers. And there's so many different aspects that have to contribute to that. Marketing, sales, R&D, customer service, all the operations that keeps the business flowing. But if any single one of those is not playing in the orchestra well, you're going to hear it and it's going to probably ruin the whole piece.
Absolutely.
So I'm really glad that you said that. Outside of what we talked about so far, what do you think is hard about life science marketing, and what sort of tips and tricks would you have for people perhaps a little bit earlier in their careers?
Yeah, I think one of the harder things is there's a lot of gray hair, including mine. There's a lot of gray hair in the industry. Staying youthful and staying in touch with, embracing what Gen Z and others have got to offer us, I think is really important for us. And, one of the things we're doing is we're deliberately working with universities to try and have university projects done on our behalf, deliberately engaging younger thinkers to come on in and embrace that. And of course, that cuts both ways, right? So, those starting off in this career, I can assure you it is fascinating. No 2 days are ever the same because there's always something new to learn. It's hard work, but then hard work never killed a man, as my father always used to remind me. indeed, arguably, it makes you the person that you are. So I think go in with your eyes wide open and be prepared to work hard and be prepared to learn. But also, don't ever forget that what you're doing is a professional discipline and a valued discipline. There are plenty of organizations, more on the B2C world, that espouse marketing above all else. It is a marketing campaign that drives sales, that sells a product. I remember once, I won't use the brand name, but I'll describe it to you. There was a drink that was in a glass bottle. It was orange, and you used to have to shake it to bring it to life. Well, this is a classic piece of marketing, because actually what they found was that the product would settle during transportation or sit on a shelf. And so the marketer brought it to life by saying, no, you have to shake it to bring it to life. And this idea of marketing as a professional discipline designed specifically to bring the best out of the product and create sales, that should never be overlooked. So I say be proud of being a marketer and think whether or not the dog might be being wagged by the tail and not the other way around, and be prepared to sort of, find positions of leadership and go for positions of leadership that will allow you to have those conversations where you might not at first be very welcomed.
I love that. I think we've been very fortunate to enjoy our marketing careers developing, for me, in an age when marketing became ever more a strategic discipline within most businesses, I would argue, at the transition away from the colouring in department to the department that works the hardest often to understand customers and document that information for the rest of the organisation to use, but also to create the compelling stories that get audience engagement, and then actually manage a lot of touch points with the customer before they even speak to a sales team. This isn't 25 years ago. Sales and business development professionals had all the information. Customers had none. They had to go see the business development or salespeople to get some insights. Whereas now, because of the freedom of information, the internet, etc., which of course is information put out by marketing, we play such a big role in what customers think about our brand, our solutions, and it's almost like the customers choose when to engage us.
Yes.
Not the other way around. They don't have to, they choose to.
Very much. Yeah, that's very true. That's absolutely true. And again, that kind of comes back to the point about having a really well orchestrated, simple presentation, right? That opportunity for, what is it you want to be known for, and only talk about that. That's kind of key in order to mean that you know, how do we as a CRO get a seat at the table along with other CROs? Well, we do that by being relevant and by being found and by being, you know, known for what it is that we want to be known for. We want to create that curiosity in our audience so that they come and ask us to tell them a little bit more. And that is our opportunity, of course, to really dive in and build and cement relationship. But that takes time. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I want to respect your time, JK. I know you've got another call to go to. So thank you for a very harmonious conversation. I appreciated that. You've definitely played a good tune. And if anybody is inspired by listening to this and they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
LinkedIn is without doubt the best way. So yeah, I'm relatively easy to find on LinkedIn. John M. Kennett, M for Michael, my father's name, John M. Kennett. And you'll find me, no problem.
Great stuff. Thanks again, JK. Lovely to hang out with you, and I'll look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thanks, Paul. See you again.
Cheers. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Life Science and Marketing Podcast. For your regular dose of cutting-edge life science marketing insights, don't forget to subscribe. Join us again in 2 weeks for another engaging expert discussion.